Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Minds of Billy Milligan is Daniel Key's 1981 nonfiction account of William Stanley Milligan, an Ohio man whose criminal case became a landmark in the public history of dissociative identity disorder, then commonly called multiple personality disorder. The book combines true crime, psychiatric case study, courtroom narrative, and biographical reconstruction. Milligan was charged with serious violent crimes, including kidnapping and rape, and was found not guilty by reason of insanity after experts argued that different identities within him had acted outside the awareness of his core personality. Keyes presents Milligan as a person divided among 24 identities, each with distinct memories, abilities, temperaments, and roles. The purpose of the book is not only to recount a sensational legal case, but to examine trauma, identity, responsibility, diagnosis, and treatment. Because Keyes writes with the pacing of a novel while relying on interviews, records, and psychiatric material. The book occupies a distinctive place between literary nonfiction and psychological documentation. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, 24 identities as a structure for explaining divided consciousness. The central organizing feature of the Minds of Billy Milligan is the claim that Milligan housed 24 identities, each occupying a specific position in an internal system. Keyes presents these identities not as simple mood changes, but as differentiated figures with separate memories, accents, skills, ages, fears, and functions. Some are protective, some antisocial, some childlike, and some are associated with pain or forbidden impulses. This structure gives the book its unusual psychological architecture. Instead of treating Milligan as a single criminal defendant with inconsistent behavior, Keyes frames his life as a struggle among competing parts of consciousness for control of the body. The idea of taking control becomes central because legal and moral responsibility depend on who was aware, who acted, and who remembered. The system also allows Keyes to dramatize dissociation as an internal social order with rules, punishments, alliances, and exclusions. Whether readers accept every clinical claim or remain skeptical, the book makes the abstract concept of dissociation concrete by showing how fragmentation could affect speech, memory, competence, and daily functioning. Secondly, trauma, repression, and the proposed origins of dissociation. Keyes links Milligan's dissociation to severe childhood trauma, presenting the identities as psychological responses to overwhelming experiences that the central self could not integrate. In this framework, fragmentation is not random. It becomes a survival mechanism in which unbearable fear, pain, anger, sexuality, and shame are separated into different compartments. Certain identities carry memories or emotions that others cannot tolerate, while protective figures manage danger or social interaction. This explanation reflects the trauma model of dissociative identity disorder, which argues that early abuse and chronic stress can disrupt the normal development of a unified identity. The book is important because it shows the emotional logic behind symptoms that might otherwise appear bizarre or theatrical. Amnesia, sudden changes in personality, and contradictory behavior are presented as attempts to protect the psyche from experiences too disruptive to hold in ordinary memory. At the same time, the trauma explanation raises difficult questions. If identity is shaped by unbearable circumstances, then the boundary between illness, adaptation, and moral agency becomes harder to define. Thirdly, the courtroom problem of responsibility when memory and agency are divided. Milligan's case became famous because it placed dissociative identity disorder inside the legal question of criminal responsibility. The court had to consider whether a person could be held responsible for acts allegedly committed by an identity that another identity did not remember or control. Keyes uses this legal dilemma to show the tension between psychiatric explanation and the justice system. Criminal law usually assumes continuity of personhood, intention, and memory. Milligan's defense challenged that assumption by arguing that the body committed acts while the central personality lacked awareness and control. This does not erase the harm suffered by victims, and the book is troubling partly because it asks readers to hold victimization and mental illness in view at the same time. The insanity finding made the case historically significant but also controversial. It forced public debate over whether dissociation could genuinely suspend responsibility or whether such a diagnosis might be misused. Keyes presents the case as a collision between legal categories and the messier realities described by psychiatry. Fourthly, Daniel Keyes' narrative method and the ethical tension of true crime psychology. Keyes writes the book with novelistic pacing, detailed scenes, and strong characterization, which makes a complex psychiatric case accessible to general readers. Keyes reconstructs Milligan's experiences, interviews, institutional treatment, and internal conflicts in a form that resembles a psychological drama. The advantage is clarity. readers can follow how diagnosis, memory gaps, personality shifts, and legal proceedings interact across time. The risk is that the storytelling can appear to accept Milligan's account more readily than a purely skeptical investigation would. Because the underlying crimes were serious, the book also faces an ethical burden common to true crime writing that must describe the accused person's suffering without minimizing the harm done to victims or turning mental illness into spectacle. Keyes generally seeks compassion and understanding, but the book remains controversial because empathy for Milligan can feel uneasy beside the violent charges. Its significance lies partly in that unresolved ethical tension. Lastly, treatment, integration, and the role of the teacher identity. A major theme in the book is the possibility of treatment through communication among divided identities and eventual integration. Keyes presents therapy not as a simple cure, but as a long and unstable process of uncovering memories, reducing internal conflict, and helping the identities recognize one another. The figure known as the teacher is especially important because this identity is described as having broader access to the knowledge, memories, and abilities of the others. In narrative terms, the teacher functions as an organizing intelligence that can explain the internal system to doctors and to readers. Clinical, the idea reflects a therapeutic goal associated with dissociative identity disorder, creating cooperation among parts of the self, and, when possible, moving toward a more unified personality. The book shows why such treatment is difficult. Some identities resist exposure, some carry pain, and some exist because they once served protective purposes. Integration, therefore, requires more than naming personalities. It requires confronting trauma, responsibility, trust, memory, and the fear that survival mechanisms may disappear. In conclusion, The Minds of Billy Milligan is best suited for readers interested in the intersection of psychology, law, trauma, and true crime. It will appeal to those who want a detailed narrative of a controversial psychiatric case, rather than a general textbook on dissociative identity disorder. The practical benefit of the book is that it makes the clinical idea of dissociation easier to understand by showing how divided memory, identity, and agency might affect behavior, treatment, and legal judgment. Its intellectual value lies in the questions it raises about personhood, culpability, diagnosis, and the limits of courtroom categories when severe mental illness is involved. Readers should approach it with awareness that DID and Milligan's case have been debated, and that the book reflects Keyes' sympathetic reconstruction more than a detached adversarial investigation. Compared with many true crime books, it stands out because its focus is not primarily detection, punishment, or sensational detail. Compared with clinical case studies, it stands out because Keyes gives the material narrative shape and emotional immediacy. The result is a book that remains influential, unsettling, and difficult to classify, part psychological portrait, part legal history, and part inquiry into whether a fractured mind can be understood as one responsible self. If you would like to support Daniel Keyes, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.